Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Nacho Average Sports. We're out here recording another one, actually re-recording, because unfortunately we had this on Friday, and when we did it on Anchor's site, we had too many tabs open possibly going back and forth, and so for whatever reason, what we had recorded was lost, and so we're re-recording today for you. You know, the goal was to try to have a week, weekly show, but, here we are. We're just rolling with the punches. Perhaps a sports reference, perhaps not on that. But we're diving in. You know, we, in our last episode, we kind of outlined what to expect thematically in this calendar year for the podcast. And so, you know, not your average sports. We're starting with the base, a little chips on the shoulder. A little chip on the shoulder, Adam Gase face, as we'll call him here, the meme-worthy new coach of the New York Jets, who was making all types of faces at his press conference. And, obviously his take on the Dan Le Batard show about social media being, quote, pollution of the brain, perhaps are hard to argue with that, but it'll be interesting to see how he fares with the NYC media moving forward. And so, we hope that, the chip on his shoulder is a positive theme moving forward for the team and for the offense, young quarterback Sam Darnold, et cetera, et cetera. And we're hopping to the next one real fast because we have a lot more in store for you in this episode. So a little cheese on top, a little fondue, if you will. Who's being extra cheesy, extra corny with a little bit of humor on the side is the one and only, and perhaps this is good for the 76ers, the NBA in its entirety, and the fact that Joel Embiid is starting to have a little fun again. You know, it seemed as if the team was quite literally having a hard time processing, if you will, the arrival of Jimmy Butler and his presence in the locker room, being a somewhat big ego. But when the Sixers did play Minnesota last week and they totally dismantled Jimmy Butler's former team, Joel Embiid took to social media to thank Jimmy for letting him be a part of the scrubs and the backups to take on the starters. And Jimmy Butler throwing his own shade at the team after that win. And we'll see how that does moving forward for the Sixers and their chemistry. You know, a lot of question marks. Trade deadline is right around the corner. See if they'll make any moves there or not. But we hope everyone gets along with Coach Brett Brown, what have you. And we'll see what happens in come April for the playoffs. But jumping right into the meat of it, you know, chips, cheese aside, chips and cheese, you know, that's an appetizer for anyone. But what really makes nachos a meal is when you get into the meat, the bone, the marrow, the Kyler Murray, if you will, this one unique athlete who has now, you know, so many people talking about the incredible feats of a dual sport athlete. Time will tell if professionally Kyler does ever play two professional sports. But he did recently enter his name into the NFL draft, and we're going to try to break down what that all means for not your average sports fans out there. We go back to the 2018 Major League Draft last summer, and unfortunately, you know, our beloved Oakland A's, they not unfortunate that they drafted Murray, but looking at where Murray might head now in the NFL, who knows if this is ultimately a wasted draft pick. But they did take Kyler Murray with the 9th overall pick out of Oklahoma. At the time, it seemed great. I mean, for me personally, I was like, wow, who's this kid Kyler Murray? And knowing that, okay, he's gonna enter he's gonna play his senior year at Oklahoma to play football and see what happens after that. You know, the thing about this was that the A's had to know this was a strong possibility. And even though that they agreed to a $4.66 million signing bonus with the kid, the caveat all along was that, you know, he was going to play one more year of football. And being that his skills, totally transcended some of the field of play in the Big 12, and what a sensational year and Heisman campaign. and ultimately taking home the honors to follow up Baker Mayfield's Heisman year at Oklahoma the year before. You know, of course, now, you know, the obvious, you know, choice just went based on the numbers and the chance of immediacy to play in a professional sport. Football seems like the right idea, the right path for Kyler Murray at this point. It's unfortunate that, you know, even though Major League Baseball wanted to work with the A's, who were prepared to put him on the 40-man roster, which would be an unprecedented move by any team in a top draft pick, it's just that they don't, the Major League Baseball can't hang with what the NFL offers monetarily, and the fact that in Major League Baseball, the path includes a lot more, gradual and incremental steps towards professional debuts, having to go through the minor leagues. Whereas in the NFL, you know, let's say Murray gets drafted, he could either start right away or, you know, be a backup who on a team which, you know, I'm sure, you know, sooner than later he'll get a chance to play. So, you know, the interesting thing is just the cultural landscape that, you know, unfortunately, you know, Major League Baseball takes another loss in the grand scheme of things, in, you know, in contrast to how high of a regard we hold the NFL in this country. And although that his agent, Scott Boras, was, you know, adamant that Kyler Murray would be ultimately a baseball player and that he would report to the Athletics, you know, that's still yet to be seen. The fact that the kid entered the draft and didn't rescind his name after 72 hours, and although the start of spring training is February 15th, it's yet to be seen whether or not Kyler will show up for that. And, you know, when we think about all these new NFL hires that are happening, and including one Cliff Kingsbury, who the Arizona Cardinals just recently signed as their head coach. You know, when Kingsbury, you know, it's been talked about in recent, you know, sports journalism and conversation here and there, that when he was at Texas Tech, he thought so highly of Kyler that he was quoted as saying if he had a top draft pick, he would take Kyler Murray with that draft pick. And lo and behold, he becomes the head coach of the Cardinals, who have the number one pick. And although they did draft Josh Rosen out of UCLA, top 10 pick last year, will they use Rosen as trade bait to make that investment in Kyler Murray? It's yet to be seen. Of course, you still have the NFL Combine coming up. And so a lot of things are still yet to be worked out there. But interesting to note, because of Kingsbury's background with dual threat quarterbacks such as Johnny Manziel and one Patrick Mahomes, you know, it could be a really interesting fit for Murray in Arizona. But, you know, we'll continue to follow up on that story as time evolves towards the NFL draft and all the question marks that lay ahead. But an interesting, you know, To add some more context, if you didn't already know Kyler Murray's story, and even within his own family, the cautionary tale of his father's path for leaving Major League Baseball for college football and then having an injury is something to note here. We're just going to, you know, cleanse our palate here with a little gulp of water, if you don't mind, and keep it moving. You know, there's an interesting article on SB Nation, which, you know, talks about Murray's father when he had been, you know, he was signed in two sports coming out of high school, and that, you know, once he was at Texas A&M's football program in February in his senior year, and then again he was drafted in June's MLB draft of 1982, that he originally signed a $35,000 deal in 82 with the Brewers, Milwaukee Brewers, to play professional baseball. And though he did play in 41 games for the rookie league team in Pikeville, Kentucky, that, you know, his quote was that it was a culture shock and that he wasn't mature enough to deal with it at that point in his life. And so he winds up enrolling at Texas A&M in January of 83 with plans to play football. Another quote of his is that his arm just wasn't used to baseball, that he almost ruined it, you know, that he had tendonitis, and that to this day it still hurts, that, you know, basically he almost threw his arm out. But what ensued was a legal battle for the $35,000 signing bonus. Now, the Brewers filed suit. They sought an injunction to prevent him from playing at Texas A&M, arguing a breach of contract. But the Brewers, you know, who had signed him, they gave the team the right to renew the pact, you know, for each year for 6 years, was their understanding, whereas Murray thought the obligation was only a one-year deal. Another tidbit is that a Brewers executive said under oath that an A&M booster had given Kevin, who is Kyler Murray's father, Kevin Murray, a car and other incentives, which, according to this article in the 80s in the Southwest Conference, that probably wasn't out of the realm of possibility, and that I guess that allegation followed Kevin Murray around in years to come, because although he was allowed to play football when a judge struck down the injunction and the judge ruled that, you know, the breach of contract with the Brewers, he was no longer bound by the clause that forbade him to play football, also ruled that the contract amounted to involuntary servitude, which was prohibited by the 13th Amendment. Nevertheless, because I believe he did sustain injuries while he was playing football in college, although he led to the Aggies to two conference championships, broke some records, that he was passed on in the NFL, and that in during the draft, because a lot of people say that he was potentially blackballed. So, you know, also Kyler Murray's uncle, Kevin's brother, is Calvin Murray, who played professional baseball for years. But it's interesting to note that, you know, even with all that being said, we wish the best to young Kyler Murray, because he's exercising, you know, his right to make a choice, and you know, ultimately he holds his destiny in his hands, and has more control over it at this point than, say, his father did before him. So we wish the kid the best, and, you know, who knows, you know, we'd love for him to, even if he does pursue football, maybe he comes back to baseball, maybe ultimately he suits up in the green and gold for the Oakland A's. Time will tell. Moving forward, a little topping, a little garnish. You know, today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, so we want to give a shout-out, and we'll contextualize a little bit of MLK's connection to sports. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, every year it's become a thing recently that the NBA, you know, hosts, kind of makes a, you know, uses to use their sport to highlight the game, just like on Christmas, it kind of takes over the schedule for what's on in sports. And Martin Luther King Jr. Day has become like a holiday of entertainment, also for the NBA. But so, although the Knicks played today against the Thunder, we're going to focus on the Knicks game in London that took place last Thursday, when, in a very Knicks fashion, they lost at the buzzer on a goaltending call, unfortunately. But if you're a Knicks fan, maybe you're an optimistic Knicks fan, perhaps that loss in hindsight will be good for them, if that means they're closer to drafting Zion Williamson, we'll see. But the main reason we wanted to bring up that game, the Knicks game in London, is as it relates to Knicks forward center Enes Kanter, and why he skipped the trip due to concern of death threats and arrest from the Turkish government. You know, citing an ESPN article, which came out less than a week ago, and referencing, you know, Kanter, and the fact that Turkish prosecutors were seeking an international arrest for him, and accusing him of being a member of a terror organization, that the Sabah newspaper says that the Istanbul chief prosecutor's office had also prepared an extradition request for the NBA player, that they were seeking an Interpol, quote, red notice, citing his ties to exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, who is blamed for a failed coup in 2016. Now, Enes Kanter took to Twitter saying that the Turkish government cannot present any single evidence of my wrongdoing. I don't even have a parking ticket in the parking ticket. Laugh emoji. I have also been a law-abiding resident. As he was, he quoted a tweet by the Wall Street Journal about the story that he's going through and experiencing on a day to day, and you know, kind of looking more at this ESPN article. The interesting thing is, you know, yes, he said he feared that he could be assassinated under the influence of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, but that. Because he had been outspoken and he's been an outspoken critic of Erdogan, and that the Turkish passport, Turkish passport was revoked in 2017. And we'll get to that in a second, more context to why that occurred. But it was interesting that the Knicks had said that at the time Kanter wouldn't make the trip because of a visa issue. And then later Kanter denied that was the issue, posting a photo of a travel document on social media, making it clear his issue was safety. And he's quoted as saying that Erdogan, the dictator, is the Hitler of our century. And that he has spies, over me that, he can easily perhaps get in an ugly situation, get killed, and this is just why he chooses not to leave the U.S. or Canada. But his opinion piece, and his Kanter actually wrote an opinion piece for the Washington Post, and to kind of cite that article and add a little bit more from his perspective, he was taught to go back to how Erdogan uses Interpol and the international law enforcement organizations as a tool to have his critics arrested in other countries, and that, he did not have U.S. citizenship or U.S. passport to offer him protection, so he couldn't take the risk traveling overseas, and that even if he did, he wouldn't, especially to Britain, where he says he thinks he could be easily kidnapped, because Erdogan's arms are long. He hunts down anyone who opposes him, and in 2017, his security team, or thugs, even beat up peaceful protesters outside of the Turkish ambassador's residence in Washington. But moving on further to his personal situation, he talks about how on May 20th of 2017 was one of the scariest days of his life, and that it was the day that he realized he was being hunted by the dictator himself. Excuse us. Because he was in Indonesia, and running his children's basketball camp for charity, when he was awakened in the middle of the night by knocking on the door, and it was his manager who said that the Indonesian police were searching for him because the Turkish government told them that he was dangerous. This is saying that Enes Kanter was dangerous. So him and his management, they rushed to the airport, got on the next flight out from Indonesia to Singapore, and then ultimately Romania. But at some point, after they left Singapore, the Turkish government had canceled his passport, and that at the airport in Bucharest, they told him that he wasn't allowed to enter the country. And at that point, he knew why this was happening and who was behind it, and he was worried about going back to Turkey, obviously. And so at the time, Enes Kanter actually played for the Oklahoma City Thunder, so he received help from Oklahoma senators in order to return him to the United States. And then upon getting back to the United States, he found out that the government, Turkish government, had issued a warrant for his arrest. And let's see here. The Turkish prosecutors wanted to put him in jail for insulting Erdogan on Twitter, and because he supports Fethullah Gulen, who is a peaceful Turkish cleric currently living in exile in Pennsylvania. And Erdogan, I guess, blames Gulen for an attempted coup, as mentioned before. So, these are the not your average sports bizarre storylines that are happening in real life, that we don't, Of course, Enes Kanter, being a player for the New York Knicks, he gets a certain amount of attention. And yes, he and himself, he talks about, all his struggles on Twitter, his father still lives in Turkey, his family still lives there, the death threats that he receives. But at the same time, we kind of take it for granted, not all athletes are treated the same, are going through the same things internationally, abroad, or domestically in different communities. So it's just something to always think about. And, you know, again, you know, whether Enes Kanter's on the Knicks or not, we're always kind of, you know, keep tabs on his situation and be in solidarity with him. And the thing that actually makes this story even more bizarre, if you can dig it, is that Hedo Turkoglu, you know, let's just say Enes Kanter is not the only NBA player connected in this story with the Turkish government. Former NBA player Hedo Turkoglu is actually now, like, essentially, let me pull up this article because we had it on Friday when we initially did this show. And so the essentially Hedo Turkoglu is now like a mouthpiece for dictator Erdogan. And this is a great thing about live podcasting, you know, and so as we said before, since Friday, unfortunately, the episode we recorded got lost, we're shout out, we're coming back to our roots, we're recording on GarageBand, OMG, my guy GarageBand. Let's see here, Delusional Over Turkey, TMZ, Hedo Turkoglu. There's a good, let me see my notes here. Right, so Deadspin had the article, and pulling it up right now, essentially says that the headline is, we regret to inform you that Hedo Turkoglu does PR for an authoritarian now, and that probably you have not thought about journeyman Hedo Turkoglu in quite some time. But here's a timely reminder that he has been, since 2016, a chief advisor to Turkish President Erdogan. He obviously stands in contrast to fellow NBA Turk Enes Kanter, who is one of the president's most outspoken critics, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's interesting because Hedo Turkoglu actually basically took to Twitter and posted a picture in contrast to Kanter's take, where, you know, he did not believe that Kanter's concerns about being arrested or killed were that serious or shouldn't be taken that serious. And he, you know, he was a little butthurt when Kanter called Erdogan a freaking lunatic. But that this post here on Twitter, in this picture, states that from Turkoglu's perspective, that he received with concern the news about and the delusions targeting the Republic of Turkey's Enes Kanter, who pledged loyalty to the ringleader of Fethullahist terrorist organization. Yikes. And his statement that he would miss the game in London due to the fears of being assassinated by Turkey. We know that he has not been able to travel to many countries due to visa issues since 2017. But didn't you guys take his visa or his... No? Hello? In other words, Kanter cannot enter the UK, not because of fears for his life, as he claims, but due to passport and visa issues. This being the long-known truth, he is trying to get the limelight with irrational justifications and political remarks. Such remarks constitute another example of the political smear campaign Kanter has been conducting against Turkey, as well as his efforts to attribute importance to himself by covering up the contradictions in his sports career. Kanter not only targeted the Republic of Turkey, governed by the rule of law, with unjust accusations, but he also regarded the British security forces as weak and attempted to harm Turkish-British relations. It is obvious that this type of person's remarks are irrational and distort the truth. Respectfully announced to the public, Hidiat Turkoglu, my goodness. And the article ends, sorry, Magic fans, for all those tainted good memories, question mark. I mean, what happened to the days where Hedo Turkoglu and the Stan Van Gundy, Dwight Howard led Orlando Magic, were playing the Lakers in the finals, and Hedo blocked Kobe in game two? What happened to those days, man? Here we are, though, now. Fast forward 10 years later. 10-year challenge. So that's what's happening. That's what's happening with the Turkish athletes in relation to dictator Erdogan. And we'll keep you on notice as that story unravels. Thank you for sticking with us. We know that we're jumping here and there, back and forth, crisscross, applesauce. The crunch, getting to the crunch of the show. Who's been clutch, you know? And you know who's been clutch? When we think about dual sport athletes, we think about, you know, those of the recent past, stars such as Bo Jackson, Deion Sanders, a.k.a. Primetime, and interesting to hear their take on Kyler Murray. You know, Deion himself, he said, if I were the kid, I would pick up the bat and don't look back. I guess Deion has some regrets maybe of not playing baseball enough, but also understanding that, you know, specifically Kyler Murray's position of quarterback, the amount of hits the kid's going to take on a pro level, and that he could avoid, you know, although, yeah, the money's there and all that, but perhaps, you know, Deion's thing is about longevity and health. And just, you know, although it's a more grueling grind to reach the pros, that Murray obviously probably would have a faster track than most guys. And as we were actually going to mention before, but we just wanted to put it in this segment, was that right after the A's drafted Murray with the 9th overall pick, Bo Jackson was actually there when Major League, you know, Baseball Network was covering the draft, and he was asked about Murray. And his quote was that, you know, the sporting world was different now than when he played, and that there's a lot more talent everywhere. The talent pool is so deep, and that if he told the young man one thing, you know, obviously he chooses whatever he wants to do, but that whatever sport he chose, that he should concentrate on it. And so more or less what I'm hearing from both Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders is that Kyler should probably stick to one sport or the other, which is interesting, you know, given that those guys had their success in both sports. Of course, Michael Jordan, also a quote-unquote dual-sport athlete. We have not heard from him on what he thinks of Kyler Murray, but he did have his days on the White Sox, so I guess that constitutes some success there. You know, in Michael Jordan's famous words, you know, the ceiling is the roof, hashtag North Carolina. So the main course, man, you know, when we recorded this on Friday, we're looking at this as more of like a preparatory conversation. But now that we can, you know, we already know the results, the main course was the championship games, and that happened yesterday. And I guess the Arctic blast in Kansas City wasn't too terrible with the warm field and all that. And unfortunately, they had to play at night when, you know, I feel like the arbitrary thing of the AFC and NFC swapping time frames year by year, the NFL could have easily just made the Saints indoor game the later game. Maybe it would have been easier for fans in Kansas City. Who knows if they would have changed the result, though. But I do know one thing. Based on these games, you know, hey, the Rams won. I felt, you know, that whole Roby Coleman thing. Okay, yeah, you can review pass interference next year, whatever. But it was a bang bang play, and not for nothing. In overtime, Breeze got picked. They hit a 57-yard field goal. You know, that was no gimme. But I do think that in the playoffs for both games, you know, it kind of made this evident to me, where that the playoff overtime rules should be a little bit different, since there's a lot more at stake than at the regular season. I think that both teams should have to score a touchdown in order to win automatically from their first possession. So the Rams should have had to score a touchdown to win there. If they had taken the field goal and made it, I believe the Saints should have probably been awarded another possession. But that you just treat it, you know, as another quarter, and that whoever is winning by the end of that 10-minute extra overtime, that's who's the winner. And if they're still tied, then perhaps an extra overtime session then turns into a sudden death. But otherwise, you know, and even with the Patriots game, Brady comes down, scores a touchdown right away in overtime. Mahomes never had a chance to answer. He should have been given a chance to answer. And if they get stopped, then the Patriots win, you know. But that's what I would do to try to, you know, if the NFL wants to make it even more engaging, you know, and make it a little more just, you know, why not? What's the difference? You have viewers, your viewers will be tuned in longer, you know. But of course, here we are, the full circle, the full circle Tom Brady Super Bowl. You know, it was of an interesting consequence and dynamic. Then the Patriots won in the post 9/11 America, having beat the St. Louis Rams in 2002. And here we are again now, facing the Los Angeles Rams, a new generation of Rams. Jared Goff, McVay, and will Tom Brady win and go out into the limelight, into the twilight with some limes? No, into Disneyland with Gisele Bündchen, with another ring on his finger, six to match Jordan if he wins this one. But, you know, or will the young Rams make a difference as the Eagles did last year? We shall see. But nevertheless, shout out to, you know, our asshole in the White House for the government shutdown, because that's also going to affect this country's precious Super Bowl. Reports in Atlanta are that the security and travel around the Super Bowl are getting a little hairy. People are kind of getting nervous about not just the security for the Super Bowl, but, you know, where people are going to stay, how people are going to get there, not just for the game, the city itself. So the shutdown is affecting all types of stuff each and every day. Here in New York City, we're you know, not looking forward to what repercussions it could have on our city and all around the country. And, you know, being that it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day and in solidarity with government workers, you know, we definitely want to, you know, honor the everyone who's having to work off furlough or working without pay, and just take a moment to for everybody to appreciate the blessings that we do have in our lives. And, you know, being that it is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, you know, a sentiment that Martin Luther King, I feel like, always voiced, and that sticks with us here on this show, and that we want to share with you, is that no matter what you do, that you be the best at what you do, that you do your best to attempt to master your craft. And so we're doing that as best we can on this podcast. And we also want to shout out a huge inspiration who's inspiration for this show, but inspiration for, you know, our perspective on the show as well, is my pops. Happy birthday to my pops. And, you know, we're looking forward to another show as soon as we can, hopefully within a week's time this time. Definitely get one to you before this month of January is out. But this has been episode 8 of Nacho Average Sports. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for hearing our little sponsorships at the beginning of the show, with shout out to Anchor. Check us out, our social media handles, Nacho Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And yeah, we're going to have some more good storylines for you. So just hold tight, and thanks for tuning in. All right. Much love. Taking off, signing off. Nacho Average Sports.